King Nebuchadnezzar is a type and an example of what God is going to do with all these fools.
That's right.
This is what he means by indignation is mine, saith the Lord. And that is in Romans, our evangelist, our apostle, Paul, is bringing out this truth that we're seeing in the book of Daniel, and that we're going to go back. I remember, don't think I've forgotten, that Nebuchadnezzar is on hold out in the field. It's not going to be 7 years before I get back to this. It was 7 years for him, but we're going to give him an abbreviated sojourn out there, and we're going to come back to him to find out what happens to him. But right now, we're in the bad part of it. We're going to look at the restoration, and I hope that you, with me, will rejoice in the restoration of Nebuchadnezzar. But right now, we're in the judgment of Nebuchadnezzar. That's closer to our contemporary experience. We're in the era of being persecuted. So really, it's even before that. We're in the era of being taken in chains to Babylon. That's the era. These things happen. All things happen in a sequential order, in a logical, predictable order. And that's comforting to me about God, that he's predictable. So first, he raises up some evil dictator. He raises up some potentate who puts you through the screws, under the thumb. That would be Nebuchadnezzar. And then you're just to be calm because God's going to take care of this. This is what I want you to keep telling yourself today. Here it is. God's going to take care of this. God is on it. And you have to believe it because you don't often see it. You don't always see it. You're not always aware of it because it looks like these people are getting away with moida. They're getting away with moida, but God is on it. He's not seeing it. He's aware. And this is by faith that we apprehend that God is aware of the evil being affected, being done on the earth. But this is why those who commit the evil keep committing the evil, is because judgment is deferred. And even the wise man in Ecclesiastes said that it's an evil that judgment is deferred. It's an evil that those who do evil continue to do evil because there's no immediate retribution. And that's going to be one of the beauteous things, if you can put it that way, of the 1,000-year kingdom, is that retribution is instant. Those who offend are cast into Gehenna. Their corpses are cast there. They're not cast in as screaming mummies or zombies, whatever you call those freaky dead people who are alive. Zombies, yeah. I hate zombies. I hate anything that has to do with a zombie movie. I don't get the intrigue of half-rotted people. Sorry. So we're in the era now of seeing the evil built up and seeing God supposedly passing over it. But he's taking note of it, and there is a day of retribution. Now, for our friend Nebuchadnezzar, back in Daniel chapter 4, that's where we've left him. He's in the period of judgment. So when you see what happens to him, or what is happening to him, you can apply it then to what is going to happen to those people who are now in power, those people who are doing so many stupid, evil things, mismanaging our resources. Government is the biggest waster of money in the history of the universe. And it would drive you crazy if you thought about it. If you thought about the fact that gasoline should cost $1 a gallon or 50 cents even. I'm not that old of a person. I remember when it was 27 cents a gallon during the gas wars. The station on that corner would be bring the price down to 35, and they'd go over here, bring it down to 34. Do I hear 30, 33, 35 here? Who wants to bring gas down to 32 cents? Who wants to bring gas down to 25, 27 cents? They had the gas wars. That's the way it should be because our resources are just like a Judd Clampett. It's a bubbling crew just ready to be tapped. But we can't do it because of political stupidity. And that stuff will drive you nuts until you realize none of it is escaping God. None of the things that your enemies perpetrate upon you, none of the lies being told against you are forgotten. And that is where you give place. This is a comforting verse. This is what comes back to the ego, comes back to the fact that Jeremiah wanted people to pray for their leaders so that it would go good for them. Like, what's in it for me? Strangely enough, it's not illegitimate to ask that question. And you shouldn't condemn yourself for asking that question. Now, in relation to 1 Timothy 2, which appears right next to 2 Peter in my Bible, about praying for all those in a superior station, we have this parallel truth in Romans 12, verse 18, being at peace with all humanity. Oh, you're assuming I can do this, Paul? Being at peace with all humanity. Like, obviously, you're at peace with all humanity, right? I'm working on it. I'm not quite there yet. You are not avenging yourselves, beloved, but be giving place. There's the wonderful little phrase. Love it. Give place to his indignation. For it is written, mine is vengeance, I will repay, the Lord is saying. Listen, who's saying this? The Lord is saying that he will repay. For it is written. You remember the law of the Medes and the Persians? So let it be written, so let it be done. You have to pound your chest. I think they did that in the movie The Ten Commandments. Pharaoh did that. Yul Brynner. So let it be written, so let it be done. Ow. I hit myself. Oh. Once it's written, it has to be done. Especially when God writes it. So he's gonna take vengeance and indignation upon your enemies. So I say that to you today, oddly enough, for that to comfort you. For the same reason, Jeremiah told the Babylonian exiles to pray for those in power, because it really is in your best interest that they do well. Because if they get pissed, then things are going to go rough for you. It's the same thing with the authorities today, which we're going to get into as I delve into Romans chapter 13. The reason is for you to live a mild and quiet life. Isn't that what we learned in 1 Timothy? I'm entreating that petitions, prayers, pleadings, thanksgiving be made for all humanity, for kings, all those in a superior station, that we may be leading a mild and quiet life, that we may be leading a mild and quiet life. See, what a parallel there with Jeremiah 29. Pray for these people so that you can live a mild and quiet life. Pray for the Babylonian freakazoids under a guy named Nebuchadnezzar, of all crazy names, so that you can prosper, so that they'll stay off your case. Because you don't want them on your case. Just do what they tell you. How can I, Martin? They're unfair. They're unjust. They're doing things that I know they are. So did the Pharisees who arrested Jesus Christ. They convened a council in the middle of the night, which was against their own law. So what? They condemned a man without two or three witnesses. All the witnesses conflicted. That was against their own law. What did Jesus do? I declare my rights. What did Jesus do? I want to see my lawyer. Where was Jesus' lawyer? Because if he had had a lawyer, he would have walked, because everything was illegal. But Martin, the government's wrong. No freaking kidding. It's all illegal. But Obama's not following the Constitution. Really, I know that. Call your lawyer. Or here's a better idea. Don't. What did Jesus say to Pontius Pilate? My kingdom's not of this world. Pilate asked him, are you a king? My kingdom's not of this world. If it was, my disciples would be fighting for me. They'd be carrying signs and hollering slogans through a bullhorn. They'd be protesting outside the Praetorium, outside your walls. And they'd be calling you into account. They'd be calling their state representatives. Instead, they're home, praying, looking for wisdom in the scripture, seeking the prophecies to find out why these things are happening. As it is, Mr. Pilate, my kingdom is not of this world. Well, don't you realize I have the power to release you or the power to crucify you? You would have no power over me if it were not given you from above. I want you to apply that to those over you, to those in superior station over you, because this is going to lead you to a peaceful life. Go ahead and apply it to yourself, because it's true. It's good for you, ultimately, to realize that God put these people in the place. Don't you think God's going to deal with Pontius Pilate? He is. And Jesus knew that. Jesus knew the day was coming. Pilate was going to have his day in court, and he was going to realize the place he played in God's great plan of the eons. And so is Pharaoh. So is Judas. So is Adolf Hitler. They're all going to realize the place they played. And God's going to visit affliction and indignation upon their heads. Read Romans chapter 2. Should we go there? I don't know. Let's go there later. Romans chapter 2. Read the whole chapter. You'll find it. Fury and indignation upon those effecting evil. This happens at the great white throne. So give place to his indignation. So, because mine is vengeance. Here's the thing. Once you do that, it frees you to be nice to him. It frees you then to be nice to your enemies because you're thinking God's going to get them later on. Not with eternal torment. That's the Christian attitude. I don't like those people. I hate them. They're not like me. And it's okay because they're going to fry forever. We don't have that sort of hateful fury in our hearts. We do have a little bit of fury in our hearts that just wants to see them come to a realization of how rotten they were. They're going to. Let that comfort you. What this does is frees you to do this, to do this. Number one, if your enemy should be hungering, give him the morsel. Boy, you really make an impression on people when I bake cookies. I bake chocolate chip cookies. Take them to the White House, give them to Obama, and say, "Sir, I'm praying for you. I know your job is hard." That might even get in that guy's heart. That guy's got a heart like the Grinch. You know what? That might get to him. And that guy just might end up storming down Mount Crumpet on a sled with his little dog Max riding on top of it instead of pulling it. Wouldn't that be something? Because that's the power of grace, and that's what we're supposed to do. I can't do that if I think that my enemy's going to get away scot-free. This is human nature. This is part of the ego. God gave it to us. If your enemy is hungry, give him the morsel. If he should be thirsting, give him the drink. For in doing this, here's another little bonus. Sorry, but I think this is a bonus. For in doing this, you will be heaping embers of fire on his head. That means they're going to eternal torment, right, Martin? No, it means that their conscience is going to be seared. Because you're being nice to them, and they know they're evil bastards. And you're being nice to them, and it has an effect on them. Showing grace to your enemy has an effect on your enemy. Heaping burning coals of, maybe not regret, but of, my gosh, I expected to be cursed. I expected to be hit and hated, and this person is being gracious to me. Don't you think that affected Pontius Pilate at the Praetorium that day? The Fortress Antonia, when Jesus Christ answers softly to him and actually exonerates him, saying, "He who turned me over to you is guilty of the greater sin." That had an effect on Pilate, so that even that hardened Roman administrator wanted to release him badly. But he was a jerk still. He caved to the popular vote. He caved the fear of the authorities. He did not follow his conscience. Even his wife had a dream, says, have nothing to do with this just man. God bless her. Don't you think she's going to have a lighter judgment at the great white throne? All this we're going to see. We're going to see the nice people get rewarded. We're going to see the evil people get what's coming to them. But in the end, yes, in the end, the grace of God applies to all, because God is the savior of all humanity, especially believers.